Governor Tony Evers wants the state legislature to convene in a special session so that $1 billion can be spent on childcare, higher education, and paid family leave. It's Wednesday, August 9th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, a northern Wisconsin town will receive a major loan to help their financial troubles. This comes after a federal court ruled that some tribal properties cannot be taxed. Danielle Kading has that story. And a doctor's arrest in 1969 started Wisconsin's path to legal abortion. WPR reporters Sarah Lear and Rob Menser will explain how that event is important to today. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
Governor Tony Evers is asking the state legislature to convene a special session and spend $1 billion on child care, higher education, and paid family leave. All of those items were included in his biennial budget proposal and removed by the Republican-led Joint Finance Committee. Throughout Evers' tenure as governor, the legislature has gaveled in and out without taking any action when he calls a special session. Evers says he hopes this time will be different.
Because at the end of the day, I know that Republicans do not want to be responsible for farmers, hospitals, schools, and other businesses in their district not being able to find workers because parents can't find care for their kids.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu immediately called the governor's plan a rehash of his budget. They say their priority is cutting taxes for the middle class. A distressed town in northern Wisconsin will receive roughly $600,000 in a loan from the State Public Lands Board. As Danielle Kading reports, the loan aims to ease financial challenges after a federal court ruled that tribal properties cannot be taxed on certain reservation lands.
The decision meant removing tribal members from the tax rolls in the town of Sanborn, which lies entirely within the Bad River Reservation. That caused taxes to skyrocket for remaining residents. The loan will help refund tribal members who paid taxes while the ruling was pending. Town Chair Luis Salas says the loan provides financial stability.
It should really be able to make all the community feel better about the future of the town. And hopefully we could start mending fences.
For tribal members, the court ruling was a win for treaty rights, but it also caused anger as tax bills doubled for non-tribal residents. To get the loan, the town has agreed to freeze its tax levy for up to 5 years. Tribal members may receive refunds by the end of the week. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker says he disagrees with recent decisions made by liberal justices on the state Supreme Court. That includes last week's firing of the state court system director. Walker made those comments while speaking at a Milwaukee Press Club event on Tuesday. The choice to fire the director came one day after Judge Janet Protasiewicz was sworn in. That swung the court to a liberal majority for the first time since 2008. But Walker says he believes that firing was unconstitutional.
Well, I just think the bottom line is the Constitution is clear. The administration of the court is left up to the Chief Justice, and there's no other way. There's no interpretation. There's no other way around it. This is just a raw political move.
Liberal Justice Rebecca Dallet said the move and others were done to make the court more, quote, inclusive, timely, and responsive. After more than two decades, old-style beer is back and being produced in La Crosse starting this fall. Hope Kerwin has more on the move of the traditional brand back to the facility that created it.
Pabst Brewing Company announced this week that production of Old Style will move to La Crosse this November. It's one of many brands the company plans to transition from a contract with Miller Coors in Milwaukee to City Brewery. The facility was originally G. Heilemann Brewing Company, which created Old Style in 1902. Brand manager Adam Powers says nostalgia is one of the biggest drivers of the Old Style brand.
It's always been, you know, your dad's fridge or your grandfather's fridge or whatever it is. Those stories are always coming up, but as we see more and more young kids are drinking it.
He says the brand has seen 10% year-over-year growth in the last 3 years, and the beer remains popular in Chicago after being a sponsor of the Chicago Cubs from the 1950s to 2013. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, a doctor's arrest in 1969 started Wisconsin's path to legal abortion. WPR reporters Sarah Lear and Rob Menser will look into how this arrest is connected to today's challenge to the state's abortion ban. Stay with us.
You tune into Wisconsin Public Radio for news you can trust, conversations that draw you in, and music and entertainment that make your day better. The largest source of funding for everything you value on WPR is listener support. Join the team that makes WPR possible. Become a sustaining member. Make an ongoing monthly gift and share WPR with your entire community. It's easy to sign up at WPR.org.
And finally, a challenge to Wisconsin's abortion ban could already be making its way to the state Supreme Court. The law was first passed in 1849 and went back into effect last June when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In our series, How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849, WPR reporters explore how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since. In part three of our series, Sarah Lear and Rob Menser explain Wisconsin's path to legal abortion and how it began with an arrest.
Here's what we know. On a Saturday in September 1969, a 23-year-old grad student walked into an office in downtown Milwaukee.
She paid Dr. Sidney Babbitts $900 in cash, and Babbitts gave her an abortion. Later, Babbitts took the elevator with the woman down to the lobby. A police officer was there waiting for them.
Michael McCann was Milwaukee County's newly elected district attorney.
A woman was stopped coming out of that office and inquired about whether she had an abortion, confirmed that she'd had an abortion. And I don't think she was ever charged.
She wasn't charged, but she appeared in a Milwaukee County courtroom that same afternoon. McCann needed the woman's testimony so he could get a search warrant for Babbitts' office. That allowed police to recover evidence and eventually to place Babbitts under arrest. In the court transcript, the woman initially declines to answer any questions. Then the judge gives her immunity from prosecution.
She describes how Babbitts used dilation and curettage to terminate her pregnancy at about 9 weeks. McCann, a lifelong Democrat, is now in his 80s. He's also a devout Catholic. He's open about how his faith informs his opposition to issues including abortion and capital punishment.
I have a deep respect for human life and a suspicion that without being a vast bunch of history that whenever human life is diminished, there's a price paid for it.
To McCann, the case seems straightforward. Wisconsin had banned abortions for more than 100 years, and he had evidence that Babbitts had performed an abortion.
But in the end, things got more complicated. Babbitts sued, and a panel of three federal judges took up the case. That forced the state to defend the abortion law itself.
The issue became, you know, what were her rights? Did she have a right to have an abortion? If she had a right to have an abortion, then Babbitts had not violated the law by giving her an abortion.
By the 1960s, campaigns to legalize abortion were growing all over the country. But historian Dave Garrow says they were mostly grassroots.
These local efforts were surprisingly uncoordinated at any national level or by any nationwide organization.
In Wisconsin, one of those local leaders was Edie Rhine. Today, Rhine is 89. In the late 60s, she was a stay-at-home mom living in suburban Whitefish Bay. She founded the Wisconsin Committee to Legalize Abortion and started speaking about the issue on radio and TV. That's how she gained a public profile.
I started getting phone calls from people asking if I knew where to get an abortion, and I didn't know. And then one day I got a phone call from somebody anonymous who gave me a phone number and said, you can give this phone number and people can get abortions.
When she was interviewed by the Milwaukee Sentinel in 1970, Rhine told a reporter she never told women how to do anything illegal. But that wasn't true. Rhine used to send women to Babbitts and other doctors, many of whom did abortions secretly.
I was on the telephone a lot. I was on the phone a lot. And my 9-year-old used to pick up on it, and she used to imitate me, and she'd say, how far along are you?
But the calls themselves were serious.
a lot of the women who called would say to me, I have so many kids, I can't deal with another one. And my husband will not use birth control. And, you know, they couldn't get birth control for themselves.
Birth control was illegal for unmarried women in Wisconsin. Often, even married women couldn't get it without their husband's permission. Garrow says abortions were relatively common at the time, even though prosecutions were rare.
As a general rule of thumb, only doctors whose medical practice left something to be desired, you know, resulting in injuries to a woman or in rare cases a fatality, generally only doctors who weren't at the top of the game were the ones who got into trouble.
During the 1960s, Garrow says lawyers started seeing a new avenue to legalization. They pointed to the Supreme Court case Griswold v. Connecticut, which established a right to contraceptives for married couples. Attorneys used that same right to privacy to argue for abortion rights in cases including Babbitt's and eventually Roe.
Roe v. Wade was by no means a singular case. There were dozens and dozens of these cases, including Babbitt's from Wisconsin, from all around the country.
Ryan's group submitted an amicus brief in the Babbitt's case. It argued Wisconsin's abortion ban violated a woman's constitutional right to privacy. In 1970, the federal judges hearing the case agreed. They found that the right to privacy lasted up until quickening, or when a pregnant person feels fetal movement. That's usually about 4 months into pregnancy. The ruling effectively struck down part of the law that had been in place since the mid-19th century.
But initially, the judges did not order the state to stop prosecuting Babbitt's.
The case was tied up in appeals for years, and McCann and the state attorney general kept moving forward with attempts to bring Babbitt's to trial.
The ongoing proceedings created an environment of legal uncertainty. In 1971, a doctor named Alfred Kennan opened an abortion clinic in Madison. Just months after it opened, police searched the clinic, and the district attorney filed charges against Kennan.
That was a scary time. It felt like a police state or something, that the DA could raid a legal clinic and take all the records.
That's Annie Laurie Gaylor, who was 15 at the time of the raid. Gaylor's mom, Ann Nicole Gaylor, was a Madison-based activist who worked with Ryan.
Kennan's attorneys argued abortion had been legal in Wisconsin since the Babbitt's decision in 1970. And eventually, Kennan prevailed, though not before Gaylor's mother was subpoenaed by Wisconsin's Board of Medical Examiners about her work referring people to abortions.
Gaylor's now 67 years old, but she still has vivid memories of the attitude she encountered when she followed her mom around the country advocating for abortion rights.
I would often be left at a pro-choice table, and I was 13, 14, 15, and invariably some middle-aged or older man would come over indignant and say, if some 16-year-old tart goes out and gets herself pregnant, you know, she shouldn't be off the hook. She should have put an aspirin between her legs.
Decades later, Gaylor can't bring herself to read the Supreme Court's full decision overturning national protections for abortion. She worries that, in many ways, Wisconsin is heading back to the 60s.
Now, more than a year after Roe was overturned, Babbitt's may have new relevance. Wisconsin's attorney general references the Babbitt's case in an ongoing lawsuit. He's suing to block enforcement of the same 19th century law that led to Babbitt's arrest. Part of his case notes that in Babbitt's v. McCann, federal judges have already found that law to be unconstitutionally broad. He hopes judges toss out the state's near total ban on abortions, just like they did in 1970. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Rob Menser.
And I'm Sarah Lear.
You can hear more of WPR's series, How We Got Here, at WPR.org. And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers are Mallory Chang and John Davis. As always, you can catch us every single weekday morning right here wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.